post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to the near post. My name's Eamon Flanagan. We're here. We've got a special show this week. We've got Bex and Posh Spice in the studio. Just before, we're probably the. I think it's an exclusive. David and Posh have, you know, they've got their game in Sydney a little bit later, but they're in the studio with us tonight. So welcome to you, Arif and Nicole. How are you?
Hello, Amy.
You thought that was funny.
I hope you're referring to me as Posh Spice and not Beckham. Or football skill wise, I'm pretty sure I'm up there with David Beckham.
I think you. Yeah, you probably are. You've only got. They tell me you've only got 1 foot. Is that right?
Well, I might have his skills, but I don't think I've got his looks.
I I wouldn't dispute the fact that you know you've got a mo for Movember,
and it's
starting to grow.
Have his voice, have you heard him speak?
You don't have his voice.
Yeah.
No, but anyway, he's a very nice man, and he's in town tonight or in Sydney to play for what's his team called?
The Galaxy.
That's it. We've heard of them. 80,000 people going to watch David at the Galaxy. Now, welcome to. Thank you to Capital Football for supporting the show, and to Cave and Opening Minds, and for Jeff from Cyclone Rangers for the music, the intro theme to the show. Thanks, Jeff. And what's coming up, Nicole, tonight?
Well, we've got the usual, Arif's big issue. What is it? We'll find out soon. We've got A-Leagues, we've got interviews with Socceroos star John Aloisi, and he's going to talk about the World Cup draw. We have an interview with Ollie Roos coach Graham Arnold. And we've also got a very special guest tonight, Eamon.
Very special guest. We always have a special guest. Who's
and I think you know, this has been waited upon for weeks and weeks. I think all the listeners have probably been waiting and hoping that we'd get a big star like this person.
I thought, who is our special guest?
Well, it's me.
Oh, it's you? Nicole. I mean, we've had Harry Williams, you know, we've had Thompson Marnie, we've had...
Quite possibly our best guest we've ever had.
Yeah, and I know that people have been waiting on the seats, you know, the edge of their seats, and, you know, finally, here it is.
So. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Former Young Matilda, Nicole Somi, will be our special guest. That's going to be good. Okay, so that'll be coming off at just after 7 o'clock.
We'll also have all the local announcements that we usually do from around the clubs and Capital Football. And, of course, we're going to talk about Beckham, probably at nauseam. So.
Beckham. We love Beckham. Okay, if you'd like to SMS us any messages, number is 0432 250 759, 0432 250 759. The question we're asking tonight is, do we love Beckham, yes or no? And we'll have the verdict at the end of the show. What's your verdict, Arif?
He's all right.
He's all right. 80,000 people and he's only all right. Okay, well, we'll see. So if you want to SMS us, do we love Beckham in Canberra? 0432 250 759.
And can somebody please give us a call in the studio?
No,
the number is 6247 4400.
I can't believe you said that.
6247 4400 to express your opinion on absolutely anything. Just think about that.
Yeah. Well, we've never taken a phone call. It's going to be scary if somebody rings.
So, I just want to put you under pressure.
Yeah, you're going to do that. Okay. Well, if you would like to ring, talk to us about football, anything you like. Tonight's a great night to ring us, and we'll have an interview with John Aloisi in a few moments. And when John's talking to us, that's a great time to ring, so we can set up the phone call. Okay. So if you want to ring us, talk anything you like about football, any football in the world, any country you like, any player you like, any issue you want, 6247 4400. We look forward to hearing from you, and I'll totally give you a nod when to ring in a moment. And next week we've got Simon Hill from Fox Sports coming to launch the show. He'll be here at 5:30 at the Griffin Centre. If you'd like to come and listen to Simon Hill speak and meet Simon Hill, join us. Come and support football in Canberra. Email us at nearpost2xx@gmail.com. That's nearpost2xx@gmail.com. And if you'd like to come and see Simon Hill, we'll send us an email and we'll send you an invite. Okay, so coming up in a moment, we will have Arif's very, very big issue.
Is the marquee player a hero or a dud? The near post is clear as mud.
Well, the near post might be as clear as mud, but not our resident analyst, Arif Hussain. Arif, what is your big issue this week?
Well, Amy, there's only one big issue this week, and there's always one big issue, so there's only one big issue this week as well.
What is the big issue? Come on, we're hanging on the edge of our seats.
The issue is Australia's World Cup qualification route has just been announced.
Okay, the World Cup qualification route has just been announced, and who have we got?
Well, this week.
This last weekend in Durban, in South Africa, there was a big draw, and we drew out of the hat, wait for it, China, our old friends Iraq, and Qatar.
All right, so that's what are your impressions on that group?
Well, it's been dubbed the group of death because you've got to realise that only the top two qualify for the next round. It's not even the World Cup, it's the next round.
Right, so we go through this group in the top two and then we've got another round against...
Yeah, we've got another round against all of the top twos, and that's going to be more round robins, and then we qualify if we finish top two in the next round.
Right, so, and then if we... Okay, so let's focus on this group then. So
let's focus on this too.
The first thing is this is going to be played in the next year from February through to September.
About September. Okay. So we've got Iraq. We all know about Iraq. We lost 3-1 against them.
We got thrashed.
We got smashed.
Didn't we? It was embarrassing.
It was embarrassing, but that was in Thailand, so hopefully we did get our revenge, I guess, in the Aussie Roos. So
that was encouraging because we obviously beat the Iraq team in the Aussie Roos stage. So okay, so we've got Iraq. That they're the Asian champions.
The Asian champions.
You don't want the Asian champions in your group, do you?
It's not. I'd have preferred someone like, I don't know.
Yeah. Somebody like Thailand.
Thailand.
4-0 would beat them. Vietnam, they're a good choice.
Yeah, who else we got? We've got China.
Okay, China. We beat them last year in March 2-0 away, but that was before the Asia Cup.
That was before the Asia Cup. They've got a new coach now, and they've only got 1.3 billion people to choose from, a football team from.
Yeah, but sometimes choice is not a good thing. you can have too many people to choose from.
You can. But
they've also got a young team for the Olympics, so they've been building that.
For the Olympics. And they missed out on qualification to the World Cup last year, so they'll be hungry. There'll be a lot of pressure on them. They'll have 1.3 billion people cheering them on. So I think the game's in China. They might be. And you got to remember. Do you remember we played them last year and we did win quite comfortably?
Yeah, 2-0.
But in the second half, they played all over us.
Yep.
So that's China. And our third opponent is Qatar.
Otherwise known as Uruguay.
Otherwise known as Uruguay. Coached by the former coach of Uruguay, Jorge Fossati.
And, of course, they're so rich they can buy a few Uruguayan strikers.
They can buy a lot of people, Qatar. The thing with Fossati is that, interestingly enough, he was the coach of Uruguay when we beat them.
It's a good omen.
It's a good omen. So, not a good Oman, but a good omen, I think.
Oh, nice one. Nice one, Arif.
Nice one. Yeah.
Now, what excites you about this draw?
I think the best thing about this draw is that, yeah, it's the group of death, and, yeah, all three games are going to be tough. Six games, I guess, home and aways. They're going to be tough, but that's what we want. That's why we came through Asia.
I agree. That's exactly what we want, isn't it?
That's exactly what we want. And last time we had one meaningful game against Uruguay. Imagine that. We'll have three meaningful games on Australian soil with 80,000 plus fans at each game.
I think it's going to change the face of Australian football. Over the next 2 years, we're going to have so many Uruguayan games coming through. It's just going to be continually in the media. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Absolutely. And think about it. Last time round, we had one meaningful game and we qualified. And we did so well at the World Cup. Now, if we get match fit and we win some of these games, how good are we going to be, potentially?
We're going to be fantastic. Nicole, what do you think about it?
I think it's great. I think we could have drawn, I guess, an easier pool, but what's the point of that?
We're Aussies. We hate easy.
That's right. Exactly.
We're competitive.
I think it's better that we've got the pool of death because it means that, it places a lot more stress on the players. It means that we've got to get results in games and it's going to be that much more entertaining.
It's just going to be so much buzz around when Iraq or China or even Qatar are in town.
Well, it's interesting, the crowd that at the Ole Roos, I mean, it was mostly made up of about 50% of the crowds against Ole Roos versus Iraq was Iraqi fans. Mm. So for a World Cup qualifier, it's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be, the atmosphere is going to be amazing. Now, a couple of things do worry me. One of the things...
I hate it when you're worried.
...is that the first game's in February. It's November now. It's nearly December. We still have no coach.
Ah, a coach.
So
minor point there.
So it's a bit of a worry that we still have no coach.
We do have a little bit of inside goss.
We do.
We have a scoop. A near post scoop.
I hear we have a scoop.
I was down the Hyatt today and bumped into a gentleman who will remain nameless. But Jürgen Klinsmann was one of his friends, and he said Jürgen, who we spoke to a couple of days ago, won't be coming to do the Australian job. He's more interested in England. But he mentioned somebody who might be applying, and that was Ozzy Ardiles, the Argentinian former World Cup winner, now coaching in Argentinian First Division and has spent a lot of time in Asia. Used to play for Tottenham Hotspur in England and in Spain. So Ozzy Ardiles is an outside name.
A late entrant.
That's the beauty with the Aussie position. You can be as late as you want because you've got as long as you want.
There's no time limit.
There's no rush. Okay,
I've got one more concern. That one more concern is availability of our superstars, I guess. Now, in the press, I've been reading that a lot of these superstars may not be able to come to turn up for Socceroos duty.
Name names.
I'm not going to name names, but...
Okay, I'll name some. You're talking about people like Harry.
Mark.
And maybe even Scott McDonald. Now, he's interesting to me because he plays for Celtic.
He does.
And Nakamura. Sunshuki Nakamura also plays for Celtic. He rarely misses a Japanese game, so it'll be really interesting, won't it, if Nakamura skirts off to play for Japan in the middle of... And the Aussie boys
And not to mention, Nakamura will have to go all the way to Japan to play his games.
Yeah, and he won't be complaining. You watch him go. And if he goes and Scott McDonald doesn't go, well, we'll be watching Scott.
Think about it. If we were Argentina or Brazil and one of their players didn't turn up, it would be outrage.
In fact, I was only watching the TV the other day, and I'm sure I saw Mr. Tevez, Carlos Tevez getting sent off for Argentina in a game in the middle of the Manchester United season.
And not to mention, same game, Lionel Messi was also playing.
Yeah.
Two of the biggest teams in the world. They can release their players, yet Celtic may not be able to release Scott McDonald.
No, well, we'll have to see. We'll watch. Maybe when the World Cup comes around, people actually get a bit more serious about playing.
Let's hope so.
Okay. All right, thanks very much for that, Arif. And coming up in a moment, we've got Socceroos' John Aloisi. He gives us his thought on...
Hi, my name is May. I am 7. My favourite soccer player is Lucas Neal.
If you're going to the near post,
arrivez première.
It's a tough group. It's a challenging one, and I suppose this is, you know, the beauty of being in Asia. You know, we're going to play tough games, and if we do qualify, which we have to be confident of doing, we'll be better prepared for the World Cup. So it's big games. It will be played in Australia, so there'll be big crowds, and I think it's a good test for everyone. I think that all three are strong teams in their own right. Of course, Iraq will probably be the strongest team out of the lot because they won the Asian Cup, but, you know, Qatar have got a good league now, they've got a good side. I know that a couple of their players are Uruguayan. I know that their striker is a Uruguayan that has been naturalised, and he's a good player, scores a lot of goals in their country. And China have got a strong side now with a few of their players going to Europe and playing. And Australia has shown what what we can do. We beat China in China in a friendly, and I'm sure that we'll be right when we're playing this time.
John, playing the three Asian teams that we're playing, how important is it that we have a coach with Asian experience on board before the first game?
Look, at the end, the FFA, they had signed Avocado, who did have Asian experience, was very experienced as a coach, and not only in Asia but throughout the world, and it was unlucky what happened there, and I'm sure they're working hard on getting a coach as quick as possible for us, and I'm sure whoever they get will be the right man to do the job. I don't know if it's going to be someone that's got experience in Asia or someone that has only got experience in Europe or somewhere else in the world, but I'm sure he'll be the right man, and everyone should get behind him once he's appointed.
Obviously, we're going to have to use the A-League players at some point in the campaign. John, given how you've seen most of the A-League players now, do you think they can handle the campaign?
Yeah, I think so. I think that well, getting to experience a bit of the A-League at the moment, I can see there's quite a few good players here. The Ollie Roos also showed that majority of them have played A-League for a few years now. They qualify for the Olympics through Asia. And yeah, you're right, you know, these first couple of games, the majority of the team will have to be A-League players because it's going to be very difficult for the European-based players to come back for. And plus we'll be, you know, well, coming towards the end of the season, everyone will be fully match fit here and used to the conditions, and so I'm sure that the players will be up for it here.
Given some of the games will be played in West Asia, will this help the European-based players come home for those games?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it will help the players come back for those away games. Hopefully that they'll be available and hopefully they'll get there with enough time to get used to the conditions and also to get enough rest time before the game. But
John, what did you learn from the Asian Cup about playing against Asian teams?
We learnt about the conditions, of course. We've learnt that that no team is a pushover. We learnt that they're very good on the ball. Technically, most of the players are good. You know, so we know what to expect this time. We know if we're playing at our best that we can beat any of the Asian sides, but we know we have to be at our best. And you know, even the A-League-based squad, I think, can do a job against any of these sides if playing at our best. And I'm sure that will be the case come the first game.
John, is it good to have a tough group first up, given that there's another even tougher group waiting if we go through?
Yeah. Well, it is a benefit, I think. I think that, you know, playing these sides, you know, we're not going to expect one easy game. We know how difficult it's going to be. We get through this group. The next group is going to be tough, but four sides will go through to the World Cup, and the fifth place play Oceania team. And so, you know, if we get through this group, we have a chance of going through because, you know, we've shown that we can get through against a tough group.
Hi, I'm Lydia Williams from the Matildas. You're listening to 2XX 98.3 FM Community Radio. If you go into the near post, get there first.
And that was John Aloisi talking to us about the World Cup draw, and coming up now, I caught up with Graham Arnold, who coached the Ollie Roos side through to through the Beijing Olympics, a great achievement, and this is what Graham had to say.
What was the feeling like in the dressing room after the game yesterday?
Obviously one of ecstasy, but being in North Korea in a place that, you know, is an eerie place to go to, you know, the celebrations were quite tame. The boys, we just went back to the hotel and had dinner together, and now we're travelling back the whole day. But it was a, you know, wonderful, wasn't a great performance, it was a nervous performance the first 20-odd minutes. And the fact that, you know, we were snowed under and snowed in, where we had, there was the day that we arrived, there was a massive downpour of snow and we couldn't even train on the field. The boys were uneasy on their feet and unsure of their, you know, their balance and that. And that probably contributed with the nerves to the performance in the first half hour.
What was the half-time message that you gave to the boys? Was it just a case of don't panic, or...?
The message I gave them was, forget the first 45 minutes, that's the worst you've played in 13 games. The scoreboard is, it says what it says, but don't panic. I'm sure if you relax and go out and play the way that you can play, the Koreans will tire in the second half and we'll get those opportunities. I've stressed on this team before for 2 years now about the importance of set pieces, and just I knew if Sarkis would get some good delivery in, that we'd, the opportunities would come. So it was just a message of getting the boys to relax and go out and play the way that they can play.
Arnie, who stood out for you during the game?
I thought James Therese, he was excellent. He was one of the probably shining lights on the football side of it, where he's technically very good. But look, overall, the whole team, the character of the team was outstanding. You know, they've been to seven countries now that in the last 10 months that are not easy to get into, or they've played in extreme conditions, whether it's heat, and this time in the freezing cold. And the, you know, overall, the character has been outstanding, and they deserve everything they get by qualifying for the Olympics. But the most important thing for me, overall, is It gives them now 10 months of international football. It gives them a major tournament to play in. The players were put in a position over the last two games against Iraq and North Korea in a position that they've never been in before because they had to play under pressure. They knew they had to get results. You know, it's all new for them, and it was wonderful.
What are your preparation plans for Beijing now?
Well, I'm going to have a holiday because I've been on the go now for a long time. 2007 has been a hard year for myself personally. So the plan is I go back and finish the A-League and play in the A-League. And I'd just like to say now that I'd like to thank all the A-League clubs for all their patience and to the coaches. I know I put them in difficult positions with the release and having to get the players released to play. And I'm very grateful to them, the clubs, showing their belief in a massive tournament like the Olympics to help us prepare as best as we possibly could. And, you know, and I'll say it now that Mr. Lowy, the chairman, has said publicly he would like to get a medal. I would love to get a medal, so therefore we need at least 20 to 25 international friendly games before the Olympics. And that will all happen after the A-League finishes between the end of February and August next year.
How inspirational is Mark Milligan as a leader?
Mark Milligan's inspirational. He's a great leader, but he's... Over the whole tournament, he's been inspirational. That's our first goal we've conceded in seven games. And the defence has been rock solid. And Mark has scored some important goals for us in this campaign. North Korea, the first game in Newcastle. And then the other night against Iraq. And yesterday again, he had a huge part in that. But, he's, you know, the kid Milligan has learnt a hell of a lot in the last couple of years. He's been now to a World Cup. He's been to an Asian Cup. And you've seen him develop. And that's why I'm so happy that we qualified for the development of these players, because you've seen the development in Mark Milligan over the last couple of years. So if the other players are given the opportunity, can you imagine the development on them if they get the opportunity as well?
How far do you think the team can go at the Beijing Olympics?
I think the team is, as I said, you've seen what, you know, they've done in all these conditions and that, and all the travel they've done. But at the end of the day, you know, they've benefited from playing 14 match hard. They're match hardened now over 14 games. So if we give them good preparation, I can't see why medal's not out of reach. You know, they've a wonderfully talented group. Thankfully, the talented under 20 players, for example, Nathan Burns, Troisi, Matthew Sperenovic, Dario Vidicic, those type of guys have stepped up and made the squad even stronger. That's important.
Arnie, why has this year been particularly tough for you?
With everything involved, with the Asian Cup and, you know, with all the travelling and, you know, everything that's been involved. It has been a tough year, and as I said, thankfully 2007 finished on a good note for Australian football.
It certainly has, and that was Graham Arnold speaking from Hong Kong after the Olleroos had just flown out of North Korea on the way back to Australia. So what are your thoughts briefly there, Arif, on the Olleroos?
Oh, I think it's a wonderful achievement by the Olleroos. They're going to be one of the 16 teams competing at the Olympics, and the Olympic competition is quite a tough competition. I mean, if you think of last Olympics champions, Argentina, that team had only people like Tevez and Messi playing, so that's the kind of competition our boys will be up against. But I reckon we can do a pretty good job. We got through a pretty tough group, and I think we can do some good things at the Olympics this time around. And we've deserved, we've earned our place in the Olympics this time around.
Certainly have, and qualifying through Oceania was never such a problem. But
absolutely. Think of the opposition we used to play, and the opposition we just got through with your Iraqs and your North Koreas. So yeah, fantastic job, I'm looking forward to some good things from these boys.
Okay, well we'll be watching when the Olympics come around. All right, next up we've got we're going to have some A-League talk.
Who's top of the A-League and who's coming last? The near post, get there fast.
You're listening to 2XX 98.3 FM. You're with Posh and Bex, otherwise known as Nicole and Arif. Bex, you might have to leave us soon, lace up your boots, you know, and do your hair or something, because you've got a game. But before you do, tell us what you think about the A-League. What happened last weekend?
Last weekend was a very interesting weekend.
Interesting.
Four games, four draws. Quite not too many. Not too many. Yeah. Not too many goals either.
It's treasury talk, Nicole. Not too many. Okay, so what would you pick?
Last week's games, there wasn't much to choose from. I mean, the big game was Sydney versus Queensland, but it was a dull old game, wasn't it?
It was a little bit dry, yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah, I mean...
Beckham did come out at half-time.
He did come out at half-time, but, you know...
He didn't score.
Do you think maybe Sydney was saving themselves for a shot at Bex and the Galaxy?
Well, it's funny you say that. I mean, if you've got a chance to play in front of 80,000 people, you know, every player, and they did look a little bit slow and a little bit lethargic.
Yeah, I thought so.
The great game for me on the weekend, or the pick of the games, I thought was Newcastle versus the Central Coast Mariners.
That was a good game and a good crowd, and there was a local derby, wasn't it?
It was great. To me, that was what the A-League's all about. Yeah. You turn on your TV, because that's what I do. I don't go to games. I just turn on my TV, and you've got a packed audience, which is great, and you've got two teams that were going for it. There's plenty of good football there.
There was plenty of good football, and there was a lot of passion.
There was great passion. Jardel, he played a bit?
he did.
you think that's funny? What's wrong with that?
Can I tell you my match of the round?
Yeah.
It was Newcastle Jets Sydney FC women's game.
Interesting. Tell us a bit more about
now,
that.
Now, can I tell you that there were, four draws and one win in the men's A-League competition?
Just four draws.
Yeah, yeah.
And the women, obviously, Newcastle Jets ladies team, playing against Sydney FC ladies team, and it was a 4-1 win to the Newcastle Jets.
Four-two, I think.
Goals
anyway.
Galore, guys.
There were goals galore. And Cam Burns.
Caitlin Minos scored a goal.
Yeah.
There was, I think, 11 Matildas on show in that game.
There was 5,000 people at the game.
Yeah, and of those, you know, you've got 11 of the Matildas in there, but there was also several young Matildas in the squad.
So what's happening there? You're pushing this women's football segment into the middle of the men's football. That's interesting.
Isn't that my job?
Yeah, that's your job. it's a changing face of Australian football.
And they looked quite like, I hope it is a sort of a real good preview for what's going to happen next year.
Well, maybe we'll have to cut this section, especially if there's no goals being scored, and just focus on the women's A-League.
Well, next week we'll have an interview with Sally Shippard, who's in the media scrum for Beckham, but she'll also be played in that game on the weekend, so she'll be able to give us a little bit of feedback on that.
Hmm.
So, all right. Well, yeah.
Let's get on to this week's games. Hopefully there'll be a few more goals and a few more results.
There's no women's games this weekend, so we don't
know.
There is this weekend.
Newcastle Jets Queensland Raw.
I thought they were having a week off. They're not having a week off?
Is it a weekend off this weekend? I don't know. Maybe I'm lying to the listeners.
No, I don't know. I think they've got a weekend off, but check your guides. Check the blog. www.nearpost.blogspot.com will tell you everything you need to know about the women's game. So what's the...
Okay, now on to this week's games.
Yep.
First game, we have Wellington Phoenix versus Adelaide United at Wellington.
Burns is back.
GT's still out.
Yeah, he's out for another few weeks.
But, Wellington play well at home, so Adelaide don't travel that well.
The Phoenix normally concede in the last minute, though, I guess. The Mariners or Sydney, whoever they're playing.
They have been. But
you would think they could probably beat Adelaide, do you think?
I'm going for a 2-2 draw. They've both got good attacking teams, but they're defensively a little bit suspect.
The rubbish in defence, you mean?
I like to call them suspect.
The rubbish in defence. Okay, so 2-2 draw. What do you think, Nicole?
I think Adelaide's going to win 2-1.
2-1 to Adelaide. I'm going for the Phoenix because I'm a Kiwi at heart. 1-0 to the one. Yeah, well, you know, we're everywhere. We're all over the place.
Living in Australia.
We call anywhere home. We're not proud. 1-0. Actually, I'm an Australian. But we won't go there. 1-0 to Wellington. Who's next? Okay,
we'll see what happens. Big game next one is Queensland Raw versus the Newcastle Jets.
Massive game.
That's 2-3.
Yep.
From my reckoning.
The Jets at home. The Raw at home.
Raw used to struggle at home, but in the last few weeks they have picked it up at home and they've got some good results. So they're in good form, and they've finally got the hoodoo of winning in Queensland off their backs.
The Jets have to play Jardel, it seems, according to the chairman.
Yeah.
So that will slow them down a little bit.
That will.
Mark Bridges injured, so that's not good for them.
That's not. So a couple of injuries for Newcastle, but I think the home crowd And Queensland have been getting some pretty good crowds.
They're on a roll.
They're on a roll. So
they're 5 games without defeat.
Yeah, that's right. And a couple of wins at Queensland. So I'm going for a 2-0 win to Queensland.
2-0.
I've got 3-1.
3-1. No. Well, I know. I better say Queensland are going to win, but I'm not going to, because I know Barry McGlynn is listening, and he's going to be really upset because I'm going to predict the Jets, Joel Griffith, 1-0 away win. So there, Barry, take that.
Okay, next game. Next game is another big game. Good round this week. We've got the Central Coast versus Newcastle. Central Coast versus Sydney. Sydney FC.
Okay, local derby. Mariners flying high at the top.
They're playing very well.
One foot in Asia.
I think they've just about wrapped up the minor premiership.
Oh, that's a big call. 7 games to go. They're only 4 points ahead. If they lose this weekend, they might only be 1 point ahead.
I don't think they'll lose this weekend, though. That's the thing.
I don't think they're going to beat Sydney.
I think they'll beat Sydney. It'll be a tight game.
Sydney might be a bit tired after Beckham and his 80,000 people.
That's right. And I'd like to see the Blue Tongue Stadium with a full house. I think that's the kind of game. Having watched the Olympic game, I think you get a pretty good atmosphere in that place with, 15,000-odd people.
Yeah. And, of course, they are our favourite team in Canberra at the moment with our official links from Capital Football. So
I've got to say the right things. I'm going for 1-0 Mariners.
1-0. Well, they don't score many goals, do they?
They don't score many goals, but I reckon Aloisi, he's had a quiet last couple of weeks, but this is the kind of game that he should be up for.
Nicole?
I think Maurice being a bit too kind to Sydney, and I think it's going to be about a 3-1 victory for Central Coast.
3-1 to the Central Coast. Sydney,
Sydney's going to be tired.
Cozzy's going to get float. They're going to be partying with Bex, They will have been doing the hair extra special. They're going to be all that dress stuff you've got to put on, haven't you?
I hope you're right, Nicole, because if your tips come through, it's going to be the high scoring round possibly ever.
Maybe. Now, I think Cozzy's a bit cuter than that. You watch who he plays tonight. He's not going to play Michael Bridge. He played Juninho, because he only plays Juninho for about 20 minutes, so I'll give him a game tonight. He'll play Popovic tonight, and I think he's going to play some of the younger lads, and he'll have a fresh team on the weekend. And, I think I think they're going to win. I think they're going to beat the Mariners. 1-0. There you go.
1-0.
Yeah.
We'll see. And last game is Perth Glory versus Melbourne Victory. Now, this is a big game for a different reason. Not because it's top of the table or anything. It's a big game for Perth because Stan Lazaridis is making his comeback.
Stan is back. And he was innocent.
He was innocent, yes.
He missed a year of football, but he was innocent.
But anyway, well, Perth, they're playing better.
He's given away 150 tickets, by the way, to his family and friends. So let's hope he's playing. Apparently he's a very generous man, and they said he's given away 150 tickets. But he doesn't know whether he's starting, so,
It's good luck to Stan.
Good to see Stan back.
I think Melbourne will be too strong. 2-0 to Melbourne.
Melbourne are under a lot of pressure. If they lose that game, they're not happy. The fans aren't happy in Melbourne. They're going crazy.
They're not. And I think if they lose that game, they just about may not be.
Yeah, I think you're right. They can rest up for Asia for their Asian Champions League campaign, can't they? So no, it's not going well down there in Melbourne. Kevin Muscat kicked a few signposts on the weekend when he got sent off, so he had to apologise to his sponsor for kicking it. But there you go. So so Melbourne, I think Perth will win that one, 1-0.
So do I. I think it's going to be 1-0 to Perth too.
Some controversial picks this round, so I guess we'll have to see.
As usual, we're bound to be wrong. But anyway, so coming up next, we've got our very, very, very special guest after a piece of music, the David Beckham song, our tribute to David Beckham. How about that? Dug that one out of the fire. So,
fantastic.
Just a reminder that we've got the launch next week. Simon Hill, Fox Sports Simon Hill, will be here. Last week he was in London doing the Nigeria Socceroos game. Tomorrow night he's doing the whole of the AFC, the Asian Football Confederation's award night ceremony. Next week, he's doing the Near Post. He's coming to meet us. How about that?
Okay. Also, because Simon Hill is here next week, we also draw the winner of the 442 competition. We do have a year's subscription to 442 magazine, which is Australia's favourite football magazine. So if you want to enter in that competition, just send us an email with 25 words or less while you love football. So just email us at nearpost2xx@gmail.com. We've had a couple of entrants, but not that many, so get it in there and you're in it with a pretty good chance to win a pretty good subscription.
And Simon Hill will present the award or the subscription prize on the night. So it's never too late. You can enter right up until the last moment, whether you're young or old, know nothing about football or you just want to make it up. We don't mind. nearpost2xx@gmail.com.
Am I allowed to enter?
You can enter.
Oh, fantastic.
But you might win.
Nicole's the judge and you've got that. Okay, and this is a song for Simon Hill.
Blue moon, you got me standing alone, without a love in my heart, without a love of my own.
And what does that song have to do with Simon Hill? Anybody? Anybody?
I missed it, mate.
Blue Moon. What does it have to do with Simon Hill?
Man City.
Man City, that's right. So we'll play that for him next week in the studio. I'm sure he'll be particularly appreciative. And thanks to Gail for singing that song so beautifully for us here on the Near Post. Okay, we've got a song for Bex. Dear old David in Sydney tonight. 32-year-old man having to run around in front of 80,000 people pretending that having played in World Cups and European Cup finals and FA Cup finals and won trophies and had Fergie chuck boots at him and all sorts, and he's got to pretend that tonight is the greatest game of his life. So go for it, Dave. And that was my all-time favourite song, Go David Go, Go West Mix. That's from the artist is called Beckham United, believe it or not. But anyway, there you go. David Beckham is on telly very soon, but stay with us until he comes on. Okay, we have our very special guest. We're delighted to have our special guest in the studio tonight. She is former Young Matilda and host of the Near Post show, Nicole Somi. How are you, Nicole?
I'm great, Eamon. How are you?
That's good. You sound like the person who had just been here a few minutes ago. Okay, we're going to talk to Nicole. I'm going to talk to you about just your football journey. How did you get started in football, Nicole?
I wanted to be just like my big sister, and she played football and loved it, and used to, I guess she liked having an easy opponent in the backyard, and I just got into it because I wanted to be just like her, I suppose.
How old was your big sister?
Well, she's actually 12 years older than me.
12 years, so that wasn't really the fairest of challenges.
Yeah.
But, what's her name?
Marsha Somi.
So if you're listening, Marsha, this is all about you, how you used to beat your younger sister, but your younger sister, Nicole, admired you. So what did you admire about her?
She was a really good player, and my relationship with her has always been like another mum, another hip, cooler mum.
Yep.
So
I hope your mum's not listening.
So I guess, it was good to always be out in the backyard playing with her. It was just the same with all my other younger brothers. It was, my older brother and my older sister used to go out in the backyard and kick the ball around with us.
Kick the ball, that was the thing you did. So then what happened then after you finished, kicking the ball with your sister? When you went to outside your backyard, where did you go?
I went initially to Majura Junior Soccer Club.
Good old Majura, let's hear it from Majura Soccer Club, yep.
Yeah, okay. And I remember being there at 9 a.m. in the morning and sort of running around and being absolutely freezing.
Fantastic. You must if you were there at 9 in the morning, you must have started early unless they've changed the times.
Yeah.
So you were what, 6, 5?
I started when I was 8.
8,
but okay. My little brothers started when they were, 6, 5 or 6, so I was always there with the ball, pretending to be watching them, but actually just kicking a ball by myself.
doing your stuff. Okay, so and then what happened? After Majura or during Majura?
During Majura, sort of got into a couple of representative teams and eventually got asked to move across to Western Creek because they had a women's team over there that I'd like to play for. I wanted to play for. They had a good coach.
Who was your coach?
Gordon Lockhart.
Okay,
who at the time was sort of the under-12, under-13, under-14 rep coach. So I went over there and I ended up playing in a girls' team over there. At the time, I think I was 12, and I was playing in under-16 girls. And
so you were pretty keen at this time, were you?
Yeah.
With your football?
Yeah, very keen. As I said, I was playing in a girls' team, I was playing in a boys' team, so 2 games on the Saturday. Yep. I was playing in my rep team, which played on a Sunday, and then also sort of sitting on the bench for the ACTAS team, which was also on a Sunday. So there was potentially four full games that I was playing on a weekend, and then absolutely exhausted for the school week.
Well, that's the only way to cope with school, I believe. But anyway, as a former teacher, it's the best way to get through. No comments from my former student Arif there. So, Nicole, you started playing in the rep sides, and then at what point did you realise, you obviously realised you were good, not just your passion, but you were obviously good at it. What position were you playing?
I was playing, I started off as a striker, but I was one of those strikers that couldn't actually score, much like Mark Viduka.
Ooh,
And I was slowly sort of relegated and ended up centre back. I played centre back for a couple of years and have done so, sort of moved into left back. And everybody likes what they're good at, and I've always had a bit of a talent for football. And so whether it was I liked football, therefore I was good at it, or I was good at football, so therefore I liked it, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. What kids or young people are good at, they do like. And how did it affect the rest of your life outside of football? Did it give you extra confidence? Or?
I think one of the most important things young kids growing up, from my experience anyway, and what I've seen.
Because you're 53 at the moment.
Coming up to 21, and okay, I've got opinions galore, don't worry about
good
it.
Good on you, that's why we've got you on the show, and we love it.
I think, having sport in somebody's life is especially as you're growing up, is really important, because, having that support network outside of school and, that's sport background gives you a lot of confidence in life. And I know that, football has always been a big source of confidence for me. Being good at football has always, I guess, helped with my identity as I grew up. So I'd always recommend that to, I guess, parents. Like, my kids are going to be playing lots of sports when they come along.
And with friendships and things, have you gained a lot of friendships through
definitely, yeah. There's most of my friends at the moment are people I played soccer with, and I think there's a number. Had I not played football, then I don't think I'd have such a rich life as I do now.
Do you think you're lucky to have a passion when you were growing up? Like some teenagers, younger people, when they were playing, they don't, you see them at school and they don't have a passion. Do you think you were lucky that you did have a passion to get through those teenage years?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it gave me something to do when I wasn't at school. I was training sort of five times a week and then those four games on the weekend, which wasn't easy. But I think having a passion, I think it teaches you good work habits too. If you're in sport and you're working hard in your sport, then I think it teaches you good habits for schoolwork and everything else in life.
Did you ever have any injuries?
Not any serious ones. I think, if you turned up to the Matildas or to the ACTAS squad or the Young Matildas, the number of injuries in that squad. Caitlin Munoz has, had two ACL reconstructions. Amy Chapman, the number of players who've had really serious injuries that have kept them out of the game for 12 months. I've been relatively lucky, and the worst thing I've had is, minor knee injury that kept me out of the game for, 8 weeks, and a back injury that kept me out of the game for 6 weeks.
Now, Nicole, I noticed you name dropped a couple of times there.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Young Matildas. You used to play for them?
Yeah.
When did you first play for them? How did you get picked up, and where have you been, I guess?
My first sort of camp with the Young Matildas was in 2004. I was pretty fortunate for me and unlucky for... I'll explain the story.
Just before you start, the Young Matildas is the
under 20 national team. I'd sort of been playing with the ACTAS squad for a couple of years by that stage. I'd sort of been picked up by the ACTAS squad in 2000, and hadn't made it into any sort of national teams. And then there was a camp coming up for the Young Matildas, and one of the ACT guys, actually, who was picked in the team, had a serious knee injury, and so they needed a left back or somebody
who
could
was
play.
The player?
Sian Michewski, who is playing in the Women's Premier League at the moment here in Canberra.
Yep.
She had a serious knee injury, and they needed a left back, and they wanted somebody local. So they asked me to step up, and it was a week-long camp, and at the end of the week they picked a squad to travel to the Oceania qualifiers that were in PNG at that time. And apparently I did all right and got picked in the squad and was in the starting 11 over there. And
how did you feel? So you got in the starting 11
as
well?
Yeah, it was a very nervous camp, because I was one of the younger girls. It was an under-19 team at that time.
And you were 16 or so?
I was 14.
14?
Wow. No, I just lied to you. I was 2004, I would have been... 16, 17, yeah.
Okay,
and there was a lot of older girls in that squad at the time. And I mean, it was a tough camp. There was only other one Canberra girl. And
how did you find the jump from local football, I presume you act as football, to the Young Matildas?
That first jump, to be honest, it wasn't that huge. I mean, the standard of training was much, much higher. I guess, you know, the effort the players put in, the professionalism, you know, we all had really good training jerseys, we played with good balls, we played on, trained on good surfaces. But in terms of that first qualifiers, I mean, it was probably a step down, to be honest. We were playing against countries who really do have a second-rate sort of development program.
Yep.
Solomon Islands, Papua New Guinea, so...
Yep.
Going to the World Cup, on the other hand, was a completely different story.
So, okay, so then you qualified, obviously, out of Oceania, and yep. you made it to the World Cup. Yep. That was in Russia, was it?
That time it was in Thailand.
Oh, hang on, how many have you been to?
Two.
You've been to two. So the first one was in Thailand, and there was another one, was there?
In 2006, which was in Russia.
Russia, okay. So tell us about the first one in Thailand.
First one in Thailand was quite a shock to the system, I think, because, we'd come through an easier qualification route. We'd been through Oceania and... we had played some practice games against China. Just before those practice games in China, I had been sort of working my way into the first 11, but I got hit with a back injury, which kept me out of... I wasn't able to run for 5 weeks.
Right.
Which meant that going... We had three practice games against China the month before the World Cup in Perth, and sort of tried to play a couple of those games, and fitness, obviously, 5 weeks of not being able to run and...
Yeah.
You obviously can't play.
No.
Just ask Mario Jardel.
he's had 5 years, but anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I got it. Yeah. We made it through to the quarterfinals at that World Championships.
Can you remember who you played? I know you played
in We played Canada in the first game.
Yeah.
I think we played against who did we play in the second game? Germany's second game.
Right.
And Thailand in the third game. And so we just scraped through to the quarterfinals, and we're up against USA, which was a bit of a powerhouse at that time in the quarterfinals. And that's when the coach decides, Nick, do you want to have a run?
Yeah.
So
that was your first.
That was my first game in about 3 months.
You've been ready. You've been resting up.
Yeah, I had been resting up, but lasted again. About 70 minutes. And I'm not one of the quickest players when it comes to football, and I was up against a Marion Jones sort of speedster, and it wasn't easy, I'll tell you.
No. So what was the score?
We lost that game 2-0, but...
That's not bad.
Yeah, we did play five at the back, and...
so yeah.
It was pretty much hanging on for dear life.
How does it feel when you go out? Obviously, you were expected to lose that game, but when you're playing against a team that, you know, internationally, and you think the coach has set it out that you've got five at the back, and you kind of know you're up against it, how does it feel as a player to be in that? You know, it's quite a negative setup, I suppose, but...
Yeah.
How did you feel as a player?
I was very nervous. I guess you ask any sports psychologist, I'm a classic over-anxious athlete. Before any of the Young Matildas games or any sort of big game with the Canberra Eclipse, I'm a nervous wreck. So,
right.
Yeah.
What about for a grand final for Belconnen United versus Western Creek?
A little bit different, I think.
A little bit more relaxed?
No one could argue with me that it's a completely different level. But,
yeah.
Taking a penalty in the grand final against Western Creek, the one that's going to win the grand final.
Yeah, but you didn't know that. Story. Yeah. You didn't know that, so that was no stress for you, was it? Because you actually walked back not knowing, I believe, that this penalty is going to win. So you scored your penalty and you thought, yeah, I've done my job.
And then everybody's going crazy.
And you had no idea. So that wasn't too stressful. Okay, so you've played at the highest level for the Young Matildas, and then, you know, obviously for most Young Matildas, they want to go to the full Matildas. So what happened? You didn't make it. What happened there for you?
Well, coming back from Russia last year, which was the World Youth Championships again, I didn't get a run at that World Championships, which was disappointing, obviously, because, you know.
So what's that like to be in a squad? You've gone to the World Championships, you know, you're in the squad, but you don't get a game.
Well, I mean, I guess for me in 2004, I was always able to fall back on not getting as much game time as I'd like in 2004 in Thailand. I'd always been able to fall back on, you know, I was injured and my fitness wasn't high enough, but I guess...
And you were younger, I guess, as well.
Yeah. 2006 was... I'd sort of set out for myself, I deferred uni 2006 and made sure that I was able to focus on football.
Yeah.
And not getting a run 2006 was, you know, that was a real, you know, real... It really meant to me that, you know, I wasn't actually good enough to get a run.
Yeah, so that's presumably pretty hard to come to terms with.
Yeah, it was really hard to come to terms with, and, you know...
How did you come to terms with it? You know, did you talk to people or did you have support around you? Or how did you, you know... I mean, I can understand and can hear your passion for football all your life, and suddenly you get to a level where, you know, and people often get to a lower level, you know, whether it's a rep side or whatever, and they don't go any further. But how did you come to terms with that?
Family, I suppose. Family was a big thing, but I guess... Didn't think about it for the probably the month after World Championships, and then, you know, we'd sort of ACTAS, which I'd been a scholarship holder for 6 years at that time, had their scholarships cut down from 15 to 12.
Right.
And listeners might not be aware, but the ACTAS women's programs, you know, their main goal is to have athletes on scholarship who are in national teams or very likely to be in a national team within a couple of years. And sort of a month and a half after the World Championships, you know, I'd sat down with, we always have meetings with the ACTAS coach, and he'd sort of said, well, you know, I haven't really got a scholarship for you next year. And that's when it all really sort of hit home that, you know, you hit 20 and that's the end of your career as a footballer in Australia, a female footballer.
But, now, Nicole, my spies have been telling me that in the last ACT season, you actually got a runners up award for, is that right?
For
the player of the year.
It was a dual runner up.
Okay. That's not too bad, you know? That's something to fall back on.
Yeah, it is.
Does that mean that in the whole of the ACT, you're dual second best player in Canberra?
Unfortunately, no, because not all the best players in ACT play in the Women's Premier League.
Okay, just we're running out of time. I just wanted to focus on the future very quickly.
Yeah.
So where now for you, Nicole? You're playing with Belconnen United. There's an A-League team, A-League starting next season. Is that an option for you, or, you know, you've got study commitments? Where does a young, ex-young Matilda, former young Matilda, where does football leave them at the age of 19, 20?
I mean, it's something that I guess I'd wished was here this year, because, you know, obviously I went to Belconnen United. Not having the A-League this year means that I'm having a big off-season now. Next year, I mean, it's something to keep in mind, but it's not going to be as big an issue or as big a thing in my mind as previous World Cups or previous National Leagues. I'm trying to focus on my study and get good grades and hopefully get into some postgraduate
degrees. Yeah, I guess that's the difference for a young woman who's a young male who's didn't make the Olleroos. Obviously, there's a career path. But for you, you know, at the top of the football game, you've now had to make a choice about where you go and whether you stay at that high level. And I guess that's one of the differences. And like some of those A-League players who missed out when the A-League hadn't started, 12 months of no football.
Yeah.
Perhaps if the Women's A-League had been going, you would have got into it. But hopefully, you know, you're still young and you've got heaps of years left in you and you've got plenty more goals to score. Or midfield runs or defensive starts. Okay, we'll catch up with you sort of during the season. You're going to play for Belconnen again next year, that's your plan?
Definitely do a bit of coaching with them too. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, and I know that you've got sort of an interest in coaching at quite a young age, so that's possibly another angle that you've... So you'll still be massively involved in football, I suspect.
Oh, definitely. I've got a lot of involvement with Belconnen United. I'm really liking what they're doing over there, trying to develop junior football. And develop a sort of professional atmosphere over there. So I'm going to stick with them for the next couple of years at least. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, I mean, you've got heaps of experience to give to the younger women coming through, and, you know, we look forward to keeping you on the show and also hearing all about the season ahead. So, all right. Well, thanks very much, Nicole. That was great. And you were our best ever guest, by the way. That way on. You were right. Okay, we've got a minute or so left. Just a quick thought on Beckham, Arif. It's Beckham night.
It is Beckham night. Big crowd, 80,000 people coming out to watch. It'd be nice if 80,000 came to watch A-League game where Sydney United played.
Sydney offering, FC, if you've got a Galaxy ticket tonight, you can go and get 2-for-1 for the next home Sydney game. So maybe.
Well, that sounds good. But
it's good for the game though. It's on the free-to-air TV.
Free-to-air TV. It'll be good measure of exactly where the A-League is. You know, we'll have Sydney FC, who didn't win obviously last year's A-League, and you've got LA Galaxy, who have. Obviously, David Beckham and new coach, Ruud Gullit, is he down?
Yeah, Hullett's here. Now, you've been to a lot of football games in your time, not least Germany, but why haven't you gone? You're a mad keen football man.
I have commitments here, Eamon.
Oh, commitments here, the near post,
the
over
new
Beckham.
Post.
That is dedication to
That's
the club.
Right.
Fantastic.
That's right. So I hope it's a good game. A couple of goals, a couple of good goals, and we'll see how the A-League fares against... against a team from the US.
Yeah, it should be good. Coming up in a moment, we've got the Spanish show here on 2XX 98.3 FM. Federico will be here any minute. we just keep talking until he comes. So what are your thoughts on Beckham, Nicole?
I think it should be good. As I said, it's going to be, well, as you said earlier, it's going to be hard for him to try and pretend as though this is the biggest game of his career.
Is he on your swoon list?
What's that?
Is he on your swoon list?
What is a swoon list? A swoon list.
Apparently some women have a swoon list of male footballers. Oh. You don't?
No, he's not on my list.
He's not on your list? Who is on your list? Do we have anybody on your list? Not Robbie Cruz, obviously.
Shall we move on to some Capital Football announcements?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thanks.
I guess the biggest announcement to be made this week is to congratulate a couple of ACT players who have been selected in the Australian Schoolgirls for 2007.
Okay, who are they?
Rebecca Keating, who's in the ACTAS squad at the moment, Jenny Bissett, and Stephanie Tokic, who I understand they'll be travelling to England later this year, representing Australia there. So congratulations to them.
Well done to them, yeah. Great.
There were no ACT boys selected, which obviously is a suggestion that the women are performing better than the males.
Interesting thought. Okay. All right, anything else?
Couple of staff changes at Capital Football. You know, Stephen McIntyre's temporarily been transferred to the Capital Football office. And they've got a new development coordinator, Tom Crossley, who stepped up to that role. And one of the young guys, Alex Butt, has now got responsibility for the coaching courses, which is a good step up for him.
Okay, and next week we have our launch with Fox Sports' Simon Hill coming in. So if you'd like an invitation,